Our recall season is 7/9 over, two more next week. Why should Jonathan Stites and Kim Simic be elected next Tuesday?
Well, I think one of those two races is probably a long shot at best, just looking at the at district, but the other one is probably evenly split. I think in the end, much as voters looked at last Tuesday, they're going to look at saying, do you want to continue down the path of focusing on creating more jobs and ultimately balancing the budget? And four of those races, the majority of voters said yes. So if the message gets through, Kim Simic will have a shot. And if not, we'll find a way to work with the people who are left.
Do you think the Simic-Holperin is 50-50?
Yeah, I think it's pretty competitive. I mean, I don't do the polling in those races, but from anything I hear from you guys in the media, it sounds like it's pretty close.
Are you going to be involved in the next few days to try to help either Kim or Jonathan?
In our case, the biggest thing I've been doing throughout this whole recall campaign is focusing on our campaign, which is to create 250,000 new jobs. We're well on pace to that. In fact, for 6 months, more than 39,000 jobs. That's well above the pace we need to be on. And I think as long as I'm getting the message out, but certainly I think it helped the senators who were up last Tuesday, because people said, you know what, the reforms are working. You know, people like Luther Olson and Alberta Darling were tremendously outspent. There were negative ads galore, and yet they won, I think, in large part because we told them, the senators told them, candidates told them, that things are working, and they are.
Well, you know, some of the mailings like this, which you've seen, you know, Nussbaum mailing, Senator Coles has become a rubber stamp for Governor Walker's agenda. Was the six recall elections Tuesday, do you think it was a referendum on you and your policies, sir?
I don't know. I mean, I think in the case like that, you know, Rob Coles got 60% of the vote. So if it was a referendum, it obviously was pretty resounding. I think in the larger context, you look at that race like other races. Rob Coles, for years, has had a reputation of a fiscal hawk, somebody who looked out for the taxpayers' money. I don't think it was any shock for people in his district that they said, you know what, if the governor is pushing an agenda, pushing a plan, pushing a budget that takes one of the largest structural deficits ever and turns it into a surplus, not by pushing off payments, not by raiding funds or using stimulus money, but by making true structural changes to government, showing that, you know, the bond rating agency even called our budget credit positive, I think that's what they expect out of guys like Rob Coles and others. That's why they elected him in the first place. The budget and jobs were the two big issues last November. I think they were the big issues in the recall. The one thing, though, I think that we heard, not just in Tuesday's election results, but heard in the weeks and in the month or two leading up to that, was they want us to stay focused on jobs. They want us to continue to keep a balanced budget, but they also want us to find more ways to work together. And that's what we're doing.
Well, I was up in the Simic-Holperin district, and one of the issues up there is the mining bill.
Mm-hmm.
Have you signed off on a draft on the iron mining bill yet?
No, we've been talking for months now with local officials, tribal government leaders, business groups, environmental groups, conservation groups. My hope is, before anything moves forward, we work with people. We've been briefing Bob Jauch, Senate Democrat from northwestern Wisconsin, and my hope is that in the end, if there is a bill that goes forward, it can be a bill that has bipartisan support. Certainly, I think Senator Jauch would be at the forefront of that. And I think it can be done well. Senator Jauch wants to balance the interest between an area that's highly impoverished, a huge unemployment rate, great need of jobs, particularly the kind of jobs this would produce, generational jobs. At the same time, though, tourism and agriculture, two big parts of the economy along with timber up there, you don't want to do anything that risks a conservation concern there as well. So if you can do it in a way that conserves natural resources and still promotes economic prosperity, that's what he wants. It's certainly what we want. We can make it something I think it's bipartisan.
In your interviews this week after the recalls, you've been talking about wanting to work with Democrats. Mm-hmm. Specifically, is Jauch going to have the ability to work with you on provisions of that mining bill?
Sir? Absolutely. And it's one of those where a lot of these issues get overshadowed by all of the hype and the attention and the ads with the recalls. But my staff, Ryan Murray, for example, who grew up in Superior, has been talking with Senator Jauch and his staff for months now. You look at other issues like venture capital. I think that gives us a unique opportunity because, you know, giving startup companies, new businesses, small businesses, the opportunity to grow here in the state of Wisconsin is not at all an issue that's Republican or Democrat. There's a multitude of different ideas there. We've started rebuilding that idea from the ground up through the new Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. We're reaching out to people all across the spectrum, everybody from Tom Hefty and David Lubar in the Milwaukee area to people like Kevin Conroy and Mark Buell and others here, and Tom Still with the Wisconsin Technology Council in Madison. And we're going to reach across the board to both the Assembly and the Senate to different lawmakers. I think there's a way to get this done.
History was made Tuesday with the third and fourth recalls of state senators in Wisconsin history. What did Senators Dan Kopanky and Randy Hopper do wrong?
Well, their districts more than anything. I mean, the reality is Dan Kopanky was a state senator in a district that went more than 60% for President Obama. It has trended Democrat for years in all sorts of different elections. And unfortunately for him, he was just in a seat at that certain time. And whether it was this year or next year, it was a seat that would be a challenge for any Republican to hold. And Senator Hopper's case, I mean, he won by literally a handful of votes the last time.
163.
He won by a little, or he lost by a little bit more, but not much when you look at percentages. I think the biggest surprise for most people in the Capitol last Tuesday was just how close Randy Hopper was, considering all the attacks, all the issues he had to deal with. In both cases, though, both of those senators said, back in this Capitol, back in March, that they knew that casting this vote, considering where their districts were, could very well likely cost them their job. But both of them, and I think in a profiles of courage, said that in the end, they thought this was the right thing to do for the state and for their districts, and they were more interested in the future than they were just about their own political careers. So I think many of us see that as one of those remarkable signs in politics here or anywhere else in the country, that people thought more about the next generation than they did about the next election.
Have you called Dan and Randy?
I called each of the Republican senators, as well as the winners on the Democrat side, swapped calls with Jennifer Schilling, and have worked with her in the past. Look forward to continuing to work with her, particularly for the Cooley region. And had a good chat with Senator-elect King just the other day, representing the Oshkosh and Fond du Lac area. And I think in each of those cases, we're going to find a way. You know, you've been around here a long time, just like I have. The interesting thing is the first 6 months of any legislative calendar, no matter who you are, Republican or Democrat, are always the most contentious. This is a perfect time for us because the next year and a half are the time when it's a lot easier to cross party lines. Now that the recall elections are done, I think that in itself makes it a lot easier to work together. The groups and the money and the interest that came into the state have now moved on. They moved back to Washington, or they've gone to Ohio, or wherever it is they're off to next. And the people left are the 132 lawmakers in this Capitol and myself who were elected both as Republicans and Democrats to get the job done. And I think we can get to it.
Do you consider soon to be former Senator Hopper a candidate for a job?
Neither of them asked. I don't think that's anything on the horizon. I think both of them, in various ways, are looking to go to the private sector.
Private sector. Have we seen the future in that special interest groups spend tens of million dollars in future elections, Governor?
I hope not. I mean, I hope that when you look at one point a week or two ago, the Journal Sentinel did a, Craig Gilbert, who's a great writer, yes, pointed out that at that point, that statistically, the labor unions organization was actually spending more in just that one organization, We Are Wisconsin, than all 12 candidates combined. That is remarkable. And I think that's just because you saw the national interest coming in here. So hopefully, you go into 2012, there are going to be elections in all 50 states. There's going to obviously be a presidential election, U.S. Senate elections, gubernatorial elections, legislative elections. All that money is not going to be concentrated in Wisconsin. And so my hope is by that point, regular candidates in both political parties will have more of an opportunity to talk about what they're going to do. I mean, think about it. Almost every ad you saw was not only from an outside group, it was just an attack ad. I think that the biggest, people say, who won? The biggest winners were the voters on Wednesday morning when they woke up and could turn the TV back on again. Because the ads were incredible, and they were vicious. You mentioned some of the senators that lost. I mean, the personal attacks were unbelievable. I think what I saw, and in fact, you look at Luther Olson and Roberta Darling, two senators who had incredibly intense elections, all sorts of money, completely outnumbered when it came to ads. In the end, they won, though, because I think particularly in Alberta's case, early on, she laid out from the very get-go when she started when they took out nomination signatures against her, that she stood by what we did. She stood by the reforms, talked about how the economy was improving, talked about how the budget was balanced without raising taxes, talked about how schools and places like the city of Milwaukee were now seeing that the reforms did work and are saving them money. I think in the end, voters set aside all those attack ads, looked at the facts, and in those cases, where the seats were competitive, they ultimately reaffirmed those courageous senators.
That coalition of unions mm-hmm. spent tens of million dollars. Are you mad at them for that, or do you want to offer them some type of an olive branch?
Well, to me, the people I'm going to work with directly are going to be anybody who wants to come to the table, help us create more jobs, and help us reform government. The best folks we're going to come to the table with are Democrats and Republicans alike in the State Assembly and the State Senate. In this past month alone, my office has not only reached out to every member of the state legislature, but more than 70 lawmakers in both political parties have sat down with my office staff one by one and walked through the things they'd like to see us focus on going into the fall. We meet in the next week or so with Democrat and Republican leaders in both houses. We're going to go through that list. We're going to go through some new ideas. We're going to try and figure out how many of these issues are things, most of which are just nuts and bolts, kind of get the economy going again type issues. How many of those can we get going and get passed? Great example, on Election Day, last Tuesday, we signed in law a change in the in tax incremental financing districts in Pleasant Prairie, Kenosha County, right on the state line. Mm-hmm. We're bringing so many new jobs up from Illinois in that area. They had to change the TIF law because they couldn't keep pace with all the jobs coming in from northern Illinois. Well, standing beside me as I signed that bill into law were a whole bunch of lawmakers, half of which were Republican, but half of which were Democrat, including Senator Wirch, who stands for a recall election next week. Why? Because in the end, those are nuts and bolts things. People want us focused on jobs, and they're not particularly partisan.
After Tuesday's two final recalls, are you going to ask WEAC to rejoin you and DPI Superintendent Evers to try to craft a successor to
our hope is, NCS, whether it's through WEAC officially or one of the things, I'm going to take the lead from Superintendent Evers on that, because Tony and I worked exceptionally well together in the reading initiative and now in the school accountability issue. And we're going to figure out, is it best to do it through WEAC and AFT Wisconsin? Is it best to try and go through an informal collection of teachers? We've done that successfully in the reading initiative. Read the Lead includes a number of teachers and coaches and principals and others who are part of that, who I think, if you surveyed any of them, who came from a very diverse set of backgrounds, would tell you they enjoy the process, they feel fully engaged in the reading initiative. We would plan on doing the same thing with this new design team for the accountability standards here in the state of Wisconsin. And again, whether it's officially through the organization or through it's some other mechanism bringing teachers into the mix, I think it is critically important. I got two sons who go to public schools. I want the best for them and every other kid in the state. And I know the overwhelming majority of teachers in the state, overwhelming, are in for the right reasons, for the right things, and they want the best for those kids too. So we want them at the table. We want those great teachers to be a part of this design.
Can that design work without WEAC and pass?
Yeah, I, again, my hope would be that whether it's officially participating, buying into it, finding an alternative, finding a way to work directly with Tony Evers on this, the mechanism is not as critical precisely how, but as long as we have a significant involvement of teachers who are on the front lines in our classrooms providing the feedback we need to make sure that this is going to work, I think that's critically, critically important for us. But I think it can, and in the end, one of the exciting things about this is that we get to provide an alternative that I think Secretary Arne Duncan, the U.S. Secretary of Education, is very interested in, and that is providing a viable alternative that's Wisconsin-based. We can lead the way, certainly still focusing on proficiency and advanced placement in core subject areas, but not having it be based solely on one high-stakes test, but in a combination. You want the core subjects, but you also want to incorporate how are schools advancing students. You want to incorporate what added value are they have in terms of advanced placement and other mechanisms. What are the things that are making the whole system work well in every school and every district across the state of Wisconsin? Because for us, you know, just scoring high on a test doesn't cut it. What we need, well-rounded kids who are ready to enter the workforce in the state of Wisconsin. This is a jobs issue, an economic development issue. You know, when we surveyed, or the Chamber of Commerce surveyed earlier this year, about a month and a half ago, employers from across the state, 88% of them said Wisconsin was heading the right direction versus 10% last year. A solid majority of them said the next 12 months they're going to have jobs. The one sticking point that really stood out for me, though, was despite all that good news, a majority also said the number one challenge they face is finding enough skilled workers. That has always been a strength in the state of Wisconsin, a strong, well-trained, qualified workforce. We need to make sure that continues. And so for us, that's why this is so critically important. have uniform assessment that is accountable, that is transparent, that is bought into by everybody in the system and everybody who cares about education in the state, and then make sure you make it work.
You and the Fiscal Bureau have said that the budget is balanced, mm-hmm. but if you look at the fine print, it's only balanced because Dennis Smith has got to come up with a $460 million proposed cut in MA. Mm-hmm. Of that, $190 million is GPR dollars. Mm-hmm. How soon is Mr. Smith going to make public his cuts, right. sir?
Well, one, let me back up for a second. Everything you said is accurate, but put this in context, because there was a lot of this going on in the ads that were run during the recall elections. The state budget includes $1.2 billion more in state dollars for Medicaid.
Which is more than the additional in tax collections.
Right, yes. right, which is more, right. So the the biggest single increase is Medicaid, programs we provide for long-term care for elders, needy children, families, things of that nature. So if you look at it, the Wisconsin State Journal did a great editorial that said, you look at all the cuts, they weren't about tax cuts or anything else. They were about making sure there was enough new money for Medicaid because it's grown so rapidly. Mm-hmm. The adjustments he's going to have to make in terms of the Medicaid population aren't the cut from the budget. They're the fact that even with $1.2 billion more, if we kept everything exactly the same, we'd need about $1.8 billion in total to cover all the Medicaid needs without any adjustments. So it's going to be coming fairly shortly. It's one of those where it still has to go through a pass review before the Joint Finance Committee.
Right.
It's one we're going to spend a lot of time talking with lawmakers in both political parties on. But timeline, we've still got a ways to go before we announce that specifically. But it's one where, not only Dennis Smith, the secretary, but Kitty Rhodes, who's obviously well-versed, not only as the deputy, but a former co-chair of the Finance Committee, has been out meeting with all the different stakeholders, trying to figure out a way that we make this work. Even with the so-called cap in family care, the reality is there are more people in family care today than there was last July. Mm-hmm. And there are considerably more than there was last January, and there are considerably more than there was a year ago last July. So it's not been that there aren't any new people coming in. It's just that we're not opening the floodgates. We need to systematically make sure that we're letting people into those programs in a way that's cost-effective and is client-based, not just provider-based, but client-based. So we're going to be able to do that. But time wave, that'll come out in the near future.
By January 1?
I think our goal is to have a good series of those things even in place or at least announced by the fall.
Okay, final question. Rick Perry is going to get into the presidential race. Could he be your candidate of choice?
Oh, I think this election, hands down, people ask me, what did the results mean from last Tuesday? I think they mean that, again, people want to focus on jobs, and they want us to focus on fixing our financial straits. We did that in Wisconsin. That's why those four senators were reaffirmed even though they were outspent. You look at the 2012, we are a very independent state. We can go all different directions, but I think in the fall, jobs and getting the fiscal troubles under control are the two big top issues, and voters in the state will put in place whoever's got the best plan on that. If you're Rick Perry, Rick Perry can point to the fact that in the last decade, nobody's created more jobs in Texas. In fact, I think in the last year, if I remember right, Texas created more jobs than all 49 states combined. That's a pretty compelling argument in a time when jobs will be the issues that people care about.
It sounds like you're saying you're glad Governor Perry is going to get in.
Well, I think he offers a great discussion point. I mean, I think Mitt Romney's got a compelling case, not just from government, but he's a turnaround guy. He turned around businesses. He turned around the Olympics in 2002. The Winter Olympics had fallen apart. I think he's got a compelling case to be made. I like a chief executive with proven experience who can talk about a proven record on jobs. And I think Rick Perry would heighten that debate. Clearly, he would be in the mix with Mitt Romney. But the two of them would both have a compelling argument as to who best can make the case to move this nation's economy forward. And that would be good for Wisconsin.
I just have one more question, I promise. There have been seven recall votes so far. Mm-hmm. You total up the votes cast for Democrats, it's exactly 34% of the 540,000 needed to force a recall. Do you expect to have a vote on whether you should, on your own recall?
I treat any of these discussions absolutely seriously. I'll let the pundits decide whether or not there's going to be a recall or not. But I think there's two things that we're going to, that I think are a reaction to what may or may not happen. One, I think as long as I stay focused on helping meet the goal that I set out last November, I think the reason the majority of people in the state voted for me is because I had a clear, concise plan to create 250,000 jobs. We're on pace to exceed that. We're continuing down that path. As long as we continue to do it, I think whether it's 2012 or 2014, we're going to be in good shape with the voters because that's what they want us to do more than anything else. The other thing I think that plays into that is what we mentioned before, is that I think voters were relieved on Wednesday morning not to wake up and have to watch any more negative ads. When you have $30+ million worth of ads in a couple months, I mean, they're spending, I spent $13 million over 18 months. In 3 months, you had groups spending $30 to $35 million, most of which were on attack ads. Most people I talked to the other night, election night, I was at the fair at one of our auctions for the 4-H. What they said more than anything is, I'm just sick of it. I don't want any more ads. I don't want any more campaigns. I think that will have a bearing on whether it's a recall against me or any other lawmaker next year, is people don't want year-round ads, and they certainly don't want more money coming to Wisconsin that are about nothing but negative ads. And I think with that in mind, it probably diminishes the likelihood that anybody's going to face another recall anytime in the near future.
Governor Scott Walker, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.